CliffCentral.com. Isbuza Veze.
Good morning, everybody. What's happening? What's going down? What are you doing? Who are you doing? Where are you doing it? Everybody wants to know. People have got to know, right? All right, well, we're here. We're ready for you today. It's Thursday. It's the 16th of November. All right, let's get straight into it. I'm driving such a sexy car today. Ooh.
Yeah, I just stood next to it like one of those mouth-breathing like car groupies for about 5 minutes.
I should have gone, like Ben said, I should have gone straight from the Kia Rio to to this thing, because I'm driving the F-Type Jag.
Man, oh man, oh man.
It's such a proper sports car, this thing. Like, it's proper sports car.
Yeah, Land Rover Jaguar Mendon said yesterday they'd send a driver around with this car to swap out with the Velar, which I still think is like it's superior in so many ways to just about every car I've ever been in. But this week I'm driving these two cars, and I decided to give this Jaguar F-Type a try today. Yo, It drove in yesterday. I was in a meeting or something, and Sia burst through the door, which he doesn't normally do. He normally knocks, goes, knock, knock.
Well, Sia normally bursts through the door with song rather than about cars, so that's a first.
So he goes, sorry to interrupt. Are you waiting for a very sexy white sports car?
Yeah. Like, it's very out of character for me. And I thought, when I knew that Jaguar was going to drop off a car, I don't know why in my head I was just expecting this very swanky sedan, like what a family man drives to the country club. Then I peep out the window. I'm like, what is that little sexy little thing?
And it's one of those cars, you can't be understated with a car like this, because when you start the engine, it goes...
So you can be forgiven for thinking that. I remember about 6 or 7 years ago, that's probably longer, Gareth, you had a Jag for the weekend, and you picked me up in this thing, and it felt like I was someone's mistress. It was like an old man sports car. It always had like shag pile carpeting.
They
like that old wood.
And wood on the dashboard.
And like it went fast, and it had like lines, but it was like an old man car. Now, Jaguars are like, oh my gosh, that's a sports car.
Yeah.
That's like secret agent.
Yeah.
Man of mystery.
Jeez.
Amazing.
And there is something kind of refined about them that they've kept, but they've got rid of all that old doddery.
It's very sleek, very futuristic. You know, to get me excited, you just have to slap Oprah's name in anything, or it has to be junk food. So this is very unlike me. And if I get excited over this, you know it's a big deal.
Basically, if Stedman like behaves well all year, he'll get one of these. And then he'll feel like a man again.
Well, I got to tell you, this is some engine, because I have been driving in sports mode the whole time. And then it's also got race mode, right?
Which I haven't. Winter aren't good for you.
I haven't engaged race mode yet. But sports mode, you shift the gear over to the left, and then you have manual. You also have the paddles behind the steering wheel.
Uh-huh.
Yes, sis. I mean, even just coming to a halt at a stop street, and then starting, because it's got one of those really smart engines that sort of turns off.
Ooh.
You know, when they
auto stop start thing.
Right. And then it just bursts into life when you put your finger, you just slightly touch the accelerator with your foot. I'm not talking about, you know, slam it down. This is gentle, and it goes, it talks to you.
You know, there's just something about that sound that immediately connects with a woman's clitoris. It reminds you of like a vibrator experience. Yeah. It's very pleasurable.
Right on.
Very pleasurable.
Right on.
Jeepers, my buddy, there we go. That's an insight.
Well, I mean,
I don't know if they want to use that as a selling point, but hey.
No, I mean, it's like a connect the dots kind of situation, and it just takes you back to the vibrator experience. It's very nice.
It's very nice.
So this really is the F type.
This is the F type.
But then when you are in
and
race,
we know what that F stands for.
When you do eventually take it into race mode, is it going to give you that kind of experience where you feel your organs actually shifting inside of you as you're driving?
Well, you sit in those seats. They're like racing seats.
Yeah.
So they grab you.
Things will sort of stiffen up a little bit. The suspension stiffens up and
right.
your rev range increases. Your heart beats a bit harder.
The reason that Ben is here is because, and the reason I like whenever I had a fun car before, I would ask Ben what he thought of it, because he knows a lot about these things. He reads a lot about them. He spends a lot of time driving around in interesting cars, and so he really appreciates these things a lot more than kind of just someone who gets in and takes it for a test drive. He really does. He knows what he's doing. And also, he knows how to use these different modes and everything else.
I think it was Eugene Corso who said it best a while ago. It's like, he could never create something as amazing as a car like that. So therefore, he will work hard to appreciate it by buying it. So
right.
All what he can do in life will give him money to get something that he can't understand how it could be so brilliant.
Well,
and that car is a prime example of that.
This is the point with a really amazing vehicle, and I'd forgotten about this because I haven't been driving amazing vehicles for a long time, right? I've been driving pretty much every day for 5-6 years now. I haven't driven anything other than ordinary cars that they're not super expensive, they're not super cheap, they're just somewhere in the middle. It's safe, it drives nicely, it's got reasonable fuel economy, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a long time since you hear that growl of that engine in a sports car, or that you have the super technological interior of this Velar. And I'm just, it's nice. It's a good experience.
I don't mean to sound cliched about this, but when you do get in the seat of a car like that, certain emotions come back, like your first kiss, the first time you went overseas, mm-hmm. the first time you actually got like a really good job, all these kind of things that really make you feel alive.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something, and to Mubs's point as well, that burble of the engine, that sort of vibration you feel through your body. It's quite primal, I know.
Yeah.
But there's a reason why people lose their shit for cars like this. And you actually can't fight it. If you are fighting it, you just hate yourself.
Give in.
Yeah. And there's also a reason why sometimes when you spot a car like that in the traffic and the driver just whizzes past you, like you get annoyed with them and you're like, what an asshole. But it's because you can't have that experience yourself.
Yeah.
You can't afford it.
Yeah. It's like watching people having bottle service at a club and you're like, I'll just have my beer.
So I don't want to put words into your mouth, Gareth, but I'm just saying, you know, later on today we have to go to Kailami.
Yeah, actually. We're going to that BCX conference, which I think should be really interesting. BCX Disrupt.
It's near the circuit.
Yeah.
You have a new fast car.
Maybe I'll talk to the guys.
Put one and one together, you get amazing.
Okay, this conversation's gone really well to this point. Gareth is not going on a track with a car like this.
Why not?
Because I don't feel like hosting the show for the rest of the year. I got other stuff to go in my life right now. It's a big responsibility hosting this show. Yeah.
Well, we've got an interesting day today. We've got Justice Malala popping in with the burning platform. And man, do we have a lot to talk about.
Sure.
Huh? You could take your pick. This week has been incredible. I met with some people last night to talk about a new show that we may be doing. And we got talking about Zim. And then they brought up, I didn't even know about this, Angola. Did you hear about Angola?
I know that there is something happening in Angola.
Right. So the longest running dictator in Southern Africa isn't Robert Mugabe, it's Dos Santos in Angola. And his daughter is the richest woman in Africa.
Yeah.
And you know she didn't do that because she's so clever or because she's so amazing.
Uh-oh.
She did it because her daddy's the president of Angola.
You know, family dynasties have worked that way since time immemorial.
I know. Immemorial.
Yeah,
yes, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's she's been fired.
She got fired by who?
I don't know. That's all I know, that she's been fired and that could mean that dynasty is starting to fall apart. Isn't this great news? I saw an interview with the president yesterday, President Zuma, our president, and he's the chairperson of SADC. And they
that
asked him.
Sounds sad.
I know, it's pathetic. And then they asked him, what do you think of what's going on in Zim? I've never seen this man so nervous. And, you know, usually he's very composed, can handle the heckling in Parliament.
Kind of laughs through it.
Yeah, this time he was shaken, man. You could see he was bumbling and fumbling and looking around anxiously and wringing his hands the whole time, which is, the body language, as we've learned from Gilan Gork and a lot of other people who are expert in this field. This man is nervous.
Mm.
See, because he thought, if we can approximate anything close to what Mugabe's done in Zim, I'm set forever. This thing has thrown a whole lot of these people. Museveni, they're all starting to look at this, saying to themselves, wow, if it could happen to Bob, we thought he had that thing buttoned down. If it could happen to Bob, it could happen to us. And it might not be the military. It might be civilians. This makes people with dictatorial tendencies very nervous. Despots start to shift in their chairs uncomfortably. And I wonder what our president's really thinking.
He also said that he had spoken to Bob yesterday and that Bob had said that, no, he's fine. Yes, he's confined to his home, but he's fine.
Yeah. Who believes that? Who believes that he's fine? This is a guy who's had absolute power in his country for 37 years. Mm. Are you telling me he's happy about being locked in his house by the military? Hell no. He must be furious. And if he's not furious, he's docile because he's too old to get up and make a fuss.
Well, there is that.
What an interesting story, though, huh?
Yeah.
I can't believe this happened. Beginning of this week, everything was as it has been for 37 years. Tuesday night, everything changes for Zimbabwe. And for the average person on the street, nothing changed, which goes to prove my point about how we don't really need government the way that we think we do. We don't. They don't do that much. The average person in Harare carried on with their work. The only difference was, and this is according to news reports I've been reading, that the central police station was barricaded off and sealed off.
Casually,
and the military were there. Yeah. State house was closed, but then that's always been closed to average Zimbabweans. Okay, here it comes.
Oh. Bless you.
Jesus.
There we go.
It's always an odd number. Always.
Really?
Anyway, yeah.
Okay.
So Bob has fallen from grace. And now we know what's going to happen, because you've seen this story play out before. There are two ways it can go. This is the fork in the road. Number one,
I enjoyed that.
It can go to some sort of peaceful resolution and Bob will go into exile and live on whatever ill-gotten gains he has stolen from the people of Zimbabwe for the last 37 years. And he'll go off to some horrible Middle Eastern country that no one really wants to live in, but you go there because they give you certain tax benefits and, you know, it's pretty much hot all year round and you have to have aircon on all year round. And it's okay if you have enough money to live in absolute luxury, but you're not with your people. You'll never hear your home language spoken again, except by you and your family. And you're in exile. Your home is now a space station, effectively.
Hmm.
You're isolated from everyone else. And people will hate you. History will hate you. They will write that you were a failed dictator who had to take refuge in some place far away from where you became president. It's embarrassing, but it's not death. And the other way it could end is that they'll string him up like Mussolini, torture his corpse, hang the wife up next to him. You know, that's exactly what happened to Mussolini. They hung up him and Claudia, his mistress. And people threw fruit at them and cut off their genitals and kicked them as they walked past. And, you know, they treated them like a carcass you would in a butchery, only you're not going to eat it, so you treat it a whole lot worse. And then they'll throw you in some pauper's grave, and that'll be the end of you. And you'll die ignominiously the way you lived. And that'll happen because the people of Zim are probably seething with anger deep down inside, which is why you see relief everywhere about this. You don't see people going, oh, it's an outrage. They've broken the laws of Zimbabwe. I don't know who has the temerity to say that right now? None of those people like Jonathan Moyo, who used to have a big fat mouth, and they would talk about how anyone said anything bad about Mugabe. Oh, they are counter-revolutionaries or whatever. They're all dead quiet because they know the military is busy purging all of Mugabe's rotten, corrupt allies in government right now. So they're not going to say a word.
Yeah.
Oh, no, but I mean, you wouldn't. You don't want to out yourself. You don't want to create that kind of attention around yourself.
I wonder what Thabo Mbeki thinks right now.
Mm.
Him of the quiet diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
This is not quiet and it's not diplomacy.
And then the former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Mnangagwa. Yes. So remember, he was fired, which kind of then triggered this domino effect that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's reportedly now back in the country, came back yesterday, and reports are saying that, well, he's back to take over that government. So.
Right. And it kind of helps when you have the military behind you.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But isn't this fascinating? Mm. Who would have predicted this outcome in this bizarre week of November?
But it is interesting how a coup always starts by the military taking over the national broadcaster.
Yeah. As I said yesterday, if they took over the SABC in this country, people would just laugh at them. No one watches the SABC or cares about listening to it, and certainly not for the real news.
But as I saw on Twitter, someone said, well, does the military take over ANN7 or SABC?
Or both.
All of.
Yeah.
They must take over all of them.
Hey, listen to this. Liam says, hey guys, I'm a test driver for Jaguar Land Rover here in Dubai. I listen to your show every morning while on the test routes in the desert, etc. And yes, that F-Type is MF hot. Don't forget to try the launch control. Oh, that's what I got there. Regards, Liam. Isn't that cool?
What a job.
What do you do? You literally drive cars the entire day?
Mm-hmm. It really is just that. So,
and then I assume, do you drive it in different terrain? Do you drive it at different speeds?
Well, yeah, he's got to test a whole bunch of things. And I take it with new models and prototypes and that kind of stuff. He's involved in that process too.
Ooh.
So he'll make sure that when a car is ready for you, it's gone through everything. So if you had to say on a whim, want to drive into the desert...
Oh, that's cool.
Someone's done it before, hopefully.
Right.
So the car knows what it's doing.
Okay, we got lots to talk about. There are messages pouring in that I'll get to in a moment or two. A lot of people want to talk to Ben about the Rugby World Cup decision, which...
I don't want to talk to you about it.
Oh, really? Okay, well, we'll get to that in a second. First, the five things you need to know today. Colcacchio Pizzeria has something for everyone, whether you're a meat lover or a vegetarian, or you're just someone with a taste for the sweeter things in life. We guarantee we have the dish that'll satisfy your craving. I could do with some Colcacchio's today. I think I'm going to need it. It's a long day. All right, before we get stuck into those five things, make sure that you download the Colcacchio Rewards app, because you will get all kinds of rewards. You'll escalate up the structure like Ben has, to the point where you're a maestro and you get free slices.
You'll also get the respect of the staff in the branch because they know that you're above the rest.
Really?
Yeah, I know they treat me differently.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Well, I don't look how they treat other customers. I'm sure they treat me very well. Okay. But then I feel special when I show them the app.
And you know what? Rightly so, Ben. All right, let's get into some of the stories that you need to know about today. First of all, let's start with the most important news. Harry Nell is looking to privately prosecute a person in Zuma's inner circle. Do you want to know more about that?
Ooh,
yeah,
yes.
They're not saying exactly who.
Is that a different one? Because wasn't it...
Duduzan.
Yeah.
They're going after him. AfriForum, which Nell now works for, will on Thursday announce the private prosecution of whom the organization says is a very prominent person in Jacob Zuma's inner circle. In October, they said the first person they would be prosecuting is Zuma's son, Duduzane, for culpable homicide in the death of Phumzile Dube, who was killed in February 2014 after his Porsche collided with the taxi in which he was traveling. And so today, they're going to announce another very prominent person in Zuma's inner circle that they will go after in private prosecution. North Korea has sentenced Donald Trump to death for insulting Kim Jong-un. Can you believe this?
Yeah.
Regime-run newspaper says President Donald Trump is a hideous criminal after he said North Korea was a cruel dictatorship and Kim was short and fat. Which is in the public interest and true. Kim is short and fat. Look at pictures. I'm with Donald Trump on this one. If you're going to arrest him, you may as well arrest me too, North Korea. An editorial in the ruling party newspaper focused its anger on Trump's visit to South Korea last week, in which he denounced the North Korean dictator as a cruel man in speech to legislators in Seoul. And he also called him short and fat, which apparently really upset him. You know, it's amazing. The whole country is geared towards looking after this one man's ego. Isn't that phenomenal? And here's some other news. In a major first, scientists have edited DNA within the human body.
Ooh.
Isn't that incredible? In an attempt to cure a genetic disorder by permanently changing the human genome, therapies that aim to treat the disease by altering a patient's genes have made strides over the last year. Typically, those therapies have relied on making any genetic changes outside of the human body and then transfusing the corrected cells into the patient, while allowing doctors to ensure the treatment causes no undesired effects before being put inside a patient's body. The approach also limits treatment to conditions like blood cancers, in which cells can be altered externally. So they use this amazing technology, which I spoke about before, called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, to treat something called Hunter syndrome. And they're doing trials at the moment, but they've actually got it right to edit genes inside the human body while the person has the cells inside of them. Isn't that cool?
I have so many questions.
I know, but this is where the cutting edge of science is currently taking us. And then, what's the most irritating word that people overuse?
France. Sorry.
Like?
Literally?
So.
Oh, I use so. Yeah,
I know a lot of people who start sentences with so.
Oh, I'm one of those.
Listen to this quickly. BBC4 listeners are fuming over an unwelcome linguistic epidemic, and it goes back as far as Beowulf. Let me explain. I've been increasingly infuriated, says someone called Robert from Wakefield, over the last couple of years by the increasing use of the word so when prefacing a sentence. And someone else said, I don't think so is an appropriate word with which to begin a sentence. It's lazy. Every time I hear it, the hair on the back of my neck rises, my teeth bear in a grimace. I have a champion in the presenter of a show there called John Humphreys, who believes that the misplaced so has invaded everyday speech like a noxious weed in an untended garden. I think I may have a cure for this allergic reaction, which has now reached the leader page of the Times. First, let's look at the pauses. It's called a recency illusion, a tendency to assume the things that you have noticed recently are in fact innovations. Very often they've been around much longer than you think, as this list of new-sounding old words shows. So is considered a discourse marker, a way to introduce a sentence or link parts of a narrative. And so people have complained that using this word at the beginning of a sentence is actually lazy. It's intellectually and linguistically lazy. It shows that you're trying to connect things that are disconnected and that aren't necessarily flowing from each other, and that the more you use it, the lazier your brain will become. In other words, look out for people who use a lot of so's, because they're actually not as smart as they think they are. How's that? Do you like it?
Uh-oh. Yeah, it's spot on. It's correct.
All right. And then one last thing. Ben, I'm going to let you carry this on. But basically, we do not have the Rugby World Cup in a couple of years' time. It is not going to come here. The French and the Irish and a bunch of other countries decided, nah, we don't want it to go to South Africa. And Ben will tell us more about that, because it's time for sport. Tell us, Ben.
If you're wondering what the big hoo-ha is around Rugby 2023, Rugby World Cup 2023, you would have seen that hashtag trending yesterday. So, as Gary said, I should not start a sentence, but the sentence, I'm going to reluctantly say this, so I will start with a so, because I might be able to gather myself without getting too angry. Basically, Rugby World Cup have a process whereby there's a technical committee that comes together, they assess the bid nations, and from there they say, that country is going to be the best and most suitable, therefore that should host the Rugby World Cup. South Africa won everything, basically. They were the best team, so the best country, the most capable of running it. Some say, and I agree with this, that it's more It's more capable of hosting the 29 Rugby World Cup than Japan is. And it's not hard to see why. Everything is here. We just need the games to come as well. But what happened was the island, like I said to you yesterday, these basic bitches.
The island.
They had a shit fit about they finished third, but they're never going to get that. They're basically New Zealand with slightly better looking women, or what island are. So it's not a big enough country to have an event like this. It's got nothing for the tournament. It's not going to make any money for anybody. It's not going to take the game forward. France, they had in 2007. If they want to talk about violence and not being safe for tourists, well, ISIS. So basically, everyone could have a bitch as much as they wanted, but South Africa was the most suitable candidate. So what happens is that World Rugby, again, they go, oh, we got to love this process. It's so transparent and everyone's really part of it and this is the way to do it. Basically saying we're not FIFA. But then yesterday, these dickheads went full FIFA because from this transparent technical committee's recommendations, which people then vote on to ratify, they went secret ballot.
Oh, and then the guy had the temerity to say in the news, I saw him yesterday, Billy Beaumont. this thing has been so transparent. Like, yeah, that's why you had a secret ballot. What do you think we are, dumb?
Yeah, keep on sucking on those bag of French dicks, Billy Beaumont. You can't tell us this and then go, oh, everything's cool. You should have seen how shocked the French were. They were sitting front row, and the winner is France. They were like,
mon Dieu.
You serious? Wow. And that was it. So France got it. It's 2023. It's going to France. Now, there's obviously a lot of chit-chat going on about this. People are obviously disappointed. The way I see it, first and foremost, it could actually bring jobs to South Africa in 2023. That's what these big events do, and it brings money into the country. We don't have a lot of money in this country, so that is my primary concern and reason for wanting this thing. Then you get guys like Robert Morawa, who I have a lot of respect for because he's a straight shooter, and he talks about all kinds of sport. Obviously, he's a football specialist, but he's always in the money, and he's like, oh, well done. I'm so happy that France won it because SA does not deserve it. There's not enough transformation in the sport. There's not enough black people in charge. There's not enough black coaches, administrators, the whole deal. So therefore, I'm happy that France got this. That's another school of thought. But I think ultimately, you're going to be disappointed because apart from, well, again, I say this, what do South Africa actually win at nowadays? Absolutely nothing. We just took an absolute dickie to the Irish on the rugby field at the Springboks, and now they're playing France this weekend. And I got to say, sentiments, people are not confident about the box winning this weekend either. So what happens for South Africans nowadays? We get excited about stuff, we lose, and then you just repeat that cycle over and over and over. And that's what yesterday felt like. So there'll be no Rugby World Cup 2023. And, well, for as long as we live, I can't see this ever coming to South Africa again. Because World Rugby just also showed yesterday, well, South Africa's problems aside, the fact that we've got a rotten government and the country is going into the toilet, World Rugby is just another boys' club where they sit around and they go, well, how are we going to keep this in our own pockets? Which is, unfortunately, how a lot of things run in sport, because that's just where, how things work. Sorry to break it to you this late in the game, but that is how things work. And no one really cares about South Africa, which is down in this bottom part of the world. They don't care about the Rainbow Nation. Madiba Magic died a long time ago. They just want to make money for themselves. So the World Cup will stay in the Northern Hemisphere. It might come down to Australia at some stage because, you know, they're part of the boys' club more than we are. So it'll go to USA. It'll go to Argentina before it comes here. It'll go to Japan again before it comes here. All because these guys just want to make money and keep things within their own grasps. So screw you, Billy Beaumont. And the rest of your crew, and don't tell me it was democratic, it was bullshit. Ireland were kicking up such a stink, and France were just being French. That Bernard Laporte, you smug git. You saw how he was rallying around and just basically spreading shit about SA. The moment the technical committee said, our overwhelming recommendation is South Africa, those guys were just, they weren't going, yeah, fair point. You know, you got great stadiums and you had the FIFA World Cup and the legacy's in place and everything's there. They were just spreading as much shit as they could. They were bell-pottaging themselves to death. And Ireland, they never had a chance. You guys can't tell me you're going to host a World Cup.
No.
I mean, get a life. But they were just hell-bent on South Africa not getting it. So yes, I might sound bitter. And I might sound personally disappointed by this. And yes, I am. Because that's skullduggery and it's finest yesterday. And it just means that World Rugby is just like FIFA. Huh. Telling me like Qatar got it in honorable terms? Well, you can say the same about France. They hosted it in 2007. They're hosting it again.
No, that doesn't seem right.
Come on. Yeah.
Okay, Ben, you got it off your chest. Are you feeling better? Because someone says here, Ben, 2023 was never on. Hey, everyone in the gym says we don't deserve to get it, but I say the power of the euro. We could show them the money. I'm saddened by our country's decline. Where to from here, Ben? Says McGill.
But that's just it, McGill. That's when it was announced, and I said, if this country can just behave for 2 weeks, maybe people won't understand or won't click on that things are in turmoil, which is fair enough. It really is. But World Rugby have a technical committee which they need to honor. So that's just a big farce. So, I mean, look, in our hearts, I mean, as we bid for this thing, I said, it would be great if this could happen, but ultimately we've got a terrible government who are going to ruin this for us. Plus, there's the whole European Boys Club. So it probably never was on, you're right. But, you know, we get our hopes up for certain things in life because we need victories in this country right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing do we get overly excited about other than maybe Christmas, which is probably offensive to other religions. So, I you know, where to from here? I don't know. You tell me what we're getting excited about. Rain in Cape Town. I don't know. See his chest on a Monday.
As Greg says, Ben, could we honestly afford it? Should the cash not be used for other things?
Well, this is what people also understand, is that this thing is a money-making formula. It's great because we are obviously going to have to put money in to get this thing and run it properly, but it's going to bring huge amounts of jobs and tourism in. It's proven. It's the Rugby World Cup. We're not hosting ice hockey where there's no market for it here. It's rugby. Year in, year out, we love rugby in this country. And if local administration get their ducks in order, we'll have a lot more people interested in rugby, involved in rugby, and therefore this thing was a pure profit. It wasn't at the Commonwealth Games where we were basically just doing it for shits and giggles, and that's why we had to pull out of the bid, or pull out of actually hosting it. This was a home run. It was a no-brainer. But now when people say, oh, well, at least the money can go be used for like development, you really think these dickbags in charge of money in this country are going to put money aside?
Yeah, and do you really think that the rugby authorities all over the world give a shit about like how many black people we have in our team? They don't care.
No, they don't care.
So don't let's fool ourselves to thinking that that's their priority and that's why we didn't get it. We didn't get it because we were turning into a banana republic. That's why. And they know politically that there's probably very little chance of stability in the short term.
Yeah, on current trajectory, I wouldn't want to have a Rugby World Cup here. And you've got someone like Cyril Ramaphosa going there to instill faith in people?
Cyril can't even instill faith in his own party.
Those guys probably thought Cyril was just like an old Chester Williams. They've had no idea who this guy is. He's done nothing on the world stage to have any confidence. Chester They're probably like, who is this guy?
Yeah, it's true.
Who the hell is Cyril Ramaphosa to the greater scheme of things? Mm-hmm. Unless you know what Marikana is, you'll never know who this guy is.
Ooh, Ben, you're such an EFF agent.
Not really. I don't like the EFF.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. So, the Springboks last week lost to Ireland here. I know it crippled you with massive, massive embarrassment.
But absolutely.
Alistair Coetzee was saying maybe it was because they flew economy.
What?
Due to financial constraints.
What is this guy? Is this guy?
Yes.
Due to financial constraints.
That's my type of justification.
The Springboks, most of which are over 6'4", did not fly business class to Europe. They flew economy. And he was saying that their biological clocks were upset and so were their sleeping patterns.
Mm.
A couple of things. Time zones, straight up, straight down. And secondly, why don't they not have enough money? If you're a sponsor of the Springbok team, is it not factored in that you will put this much cash up so whenever they travel, they will travel business class?
Why do they have to?
Gareth, have you seen a guy like Lurt Diaga? Have you seen Ibn Etzebeth? Have you seen these people? They are not like...
They must buy a row of four and let them stretch out on the row of four.
Do you think Conny Oosthuizen is going to have a pleasurable experience in seat 32?
I'm not worried about him. I'm worried about whoever's in 32E.
Well, exactly. So, you know, economy, I am just shy of 6 foot. I was 6 foot. I think I'm like a centimeter short of 6 foot, old age. And when I sit in economy, I always think it'd be nice to have some space. Ibn Etzebeth's like 6 foot seven or 12 or 103. He's a huge human being, right?
Yeah.
It's not just tall.
It's like
he's
a cave
broad.
Troll.
So Stephen Kitsoff, he's not the beast. You sit any of these people in an economy seat.
Okay, get them 12 hours. All right, get them into business class.
But why is that not in place already? Who's managing stuff like this?
No one.
How is it a shock? I mean, did the guys get to the airport and they go, oh yeah, sorry guys, you're in economy this time around. Huh? Sorry, but we have sponsors. There's five brands on the box. When they run out, they've got a logo on their jerseys. Like, they're becoming like F1 drivers. You're telling me that they can't manage that there's consistency in their travel? Just another reason why this team is going to shit. And I don't mean they're like be prissy boys that must be pampered with all this kind of stuff. But where's the consistency?
Yeah.
stupid.
Okay, all right.
Finally, Gareth, Football World Cup. Another thing that South Africa is not going to be part of. It sure as hell not going to host this thing ever. All the teams have now been confirmed. Peru, they got over New Zealand. And Australia, they got over Honduras. Those were the last two outstanding fixtures.
Yes.
So to run you through very quickly, before my belly falls asleep, Russia are the host. They'll be there, of course. Brazil, they're the best team in South America right now. They're there. Then we've got Iran, Japan, Mexico, Belgium, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, Germany, England, Spain, Nigeria, Costa Rica, Poland, Egypt, Iceland, Serbia, Portugal, France, Uruguay, Argentina, Colombia, Panama, Senegal, Morocco, Tunisia, Switzerland, Croatia, Sweden, Denmark, Australia, and Peru. If your country was not named there, they are not in the FIFA World Cup in 2018. Mm. So what we've got to do is we've got to pick another team that we can support. We'll get to that closer to the time.
Argentina.
Nah.
Not in.
Disappointing. Well, of course, they're in, Gareth. Did I not read the name? There we go. Argentina.
There we go. Thank you.
And yesterday in the Ramp Slam, Dale Steyn came back. He's now bowling again, and he took one wicket for 25 runs. More importantly, he finished the game with both his shoulders working. Yeah, Titans won that one. They scored 199. Markham got a 50. David's got a 50. And Bernhard Dean timed 37 of 14. You tell me this guy isn't incredible. In response to the Knights, well, David Miller, their best player, scored 8. And they lost.
All right.
Titans are going to win this. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
That's your sport for today.
Thank
lots
you,
of football tomorrow. Lots of rugby fixes tomorrow. Plus, it's the DP World blah, 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 blah. End of year, race to Dubai, big golfing thing in Dubai.
Oh, right. The DP World, blah, 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 blah.
Well, it's okay. Just, there's so many different things. I mean, I spoke myself hoarse yesterday with how long the name of that tournament, week, how long that tournament was.
All right. Well, we won't push you to it now. There's lots of other comments and questions, but we'll get to those when we have a second. First things first, let's get to Sia and find out what's going on with Said by Sia. In other words, a little bit of positive inspiration for us this morning.
Yeah, boy. So let's get our pen. I started with sir. Look at that.
I know.
So, no, let's get our pens and papers out for this morning because, you know, major life changes are, well, part of life in general, but they don't need to be this major world is ending, woe unto me, can't do anything affair. Sure, there's stress, there's anxiety, and there might even be some sleepless nights when you're going through something in life that might be challenging, but facing your new set of circumstances head on will make the transition easier. And by the way, I did say like easier. I didn't say it will be completely easy.
All right. Well, what are we talking
so,
about?
So according to, once again, so never mind. According to life coach Kimberly McKesh, here are seven ways to deal with life when it throws a certain curveball at you. Are you ready for this?
Hooray!
Let's try to deal with things a little easier. Okay. So number one, okay, the way to deal with life when it throws you a curveball is to understand that changes will happen. Mm-hmm. So even if you're a creature of habit that thrives on routine and getting everything in place and order in that way, there will be times when routine goes straight out the window and reality takes on a whole new shape. And
in other words, you can't get caught up in that.
You can't. Everything, you know, will at some point change, and that's okay, and you'll be okay because of that. So just breathe. Your routine might need to change, but that doesn't mean you can't establish a new one.
Uh-huh.
That's a good one. Number two, some changes will be challenging. That really means like right bottom of the barrel.
That's kind of obvious though.
I mean,
if they were all pleasant, we would all love change.
It's part of it. You know, these times can be trying and they can be also quite rewarding. So you might discover that actually I'm stronger than I thought I was.
Nobody gives a shit.
Okay, shut up.
And you know, you might learn that you can stay cooler under pressure than you ever thought could be possible. And you might just impress yourself with how much you're really able to handle. So these are all awesome self-discoveries waiting to happen if you just shift your perspective a little. Number three, the third way to deal with things when life throws you a curveball is to accept the new change in your life. When a change is looked at as a fresh opportunity and a chance to learn something new, it's no longer quite as scary. I'll even personally attest to this. Even if you had no intention of ever pursuing this new direction, just embrace rather that resisting is always the method of least resistance. Okay? The fourth way to deal with life when it throws you a curveball, according to life coach Kimberly McKesh, is to keep an open mind. What initially sounds like a complete disaster might actually end up being the best thing that ever happened to you. But without an open mind, you could miss the opportunity. The fifth way to deal with life when it throws you a curveball is to kill it with kindness or humor. I like this one. Sometimes, and we all know this, if we don't laugh, we'll possibly end up crying. So you might as well just focus on the former. Maintaining a sense of humor during difficult times helps put others at ease, and you might actually start to trick yourself into feeling like things are easier and way more okay than they actually are. And that right there, I personally think, is half the battle. The sixth way to deal with life when it throws you a curveball is to actually do something kind for yourself. Now, in times of stress and struggle, your own personal care might be the last thing on your priority list, but it actually shouldn't be. Take time out just to treat yourself to something that makes you feel great, really. And that can actually do the, you know, just the most in helping the whole healing process. And think of it as resetting your brain, you know, just to clean, you know, start off in a clean slate, start off better. And then the seventh and final way to deal with life when it throws you a curveball is to just get out there. While you may feel like curling up in a ball and staying inside forever, getting out there and embracing your new reality will actually feel a lot better. Your life is an adventure worth pursuing, so don't let setbacks or any sort of problems, even major ones, derail you completely. Take the time to acknowledge and embrace the change, and then get back on that horse and ride. So there we go. I like these seven ways to deal with life when it throws you a curveball, according to life coach Kimberly McKesh. Hope you got your pen and paper out for this morning's Set by Sia.
Yeah, if you miss anything, you can always just download the podcast and go and take a look.
Always.
Justice Milad is on his way to speak to us this morning about all the things that are going on in Zim, all the things that are going on locally in politics, the economy, society, stuff that people want to know. And there's no one better to rely on for a huge amount of insight than Justice Malala. He really is the preeminent political analyst in South Africa. I love this. The chairperson of the ZANU-PF Youth League, a simpering little puppy, has apologized to the commander of the National Army on television. Listen to this. This is quite something to hear. It's so pathetic. You almost cringe for the dude. This is what slavery sounds like, everybody.
Still growing up, we learn from our mistakes. And from this big mistake, we have learned a lot. I also like to emphasize that this statement which I have given, I have not been persuaded, neither coerced or forced to do as such. I'm emphasizing that I have reflected on my own as a young person, as a leader of the youth league. Hence, I have come to this juncture of offering myself to the state media to give this public apology. We shall also make public efforts to approach the commanders of our defense forces in person so that we convey this apology. I think.
How's that? I mean, this is a guy who had lots to say about everybody in government except Robert Mugabe. He's basically ready to take orders, is what he's saying. I'm incapable of any kind of individual thought. I like to take orders. You can deploy me where you need to. And that word deploy is important because we use it a lot in South Africa. This is the case with so many people in our president's government at the moment. The moment he's gone, they will all be begging for jobs from whoever takes his place. This is the kind of craven, weak, spineless, pathetic, needing to suckle on the state teat type of person that you attract when you go into government or when you're in party politics. And it makes me ill. And they're not just, these people are not confined only to the ANC or to ZANU-PF, but to other parties as well, where they'll do whatever it requires to not have to think for themselves, where they'll do whatever it takes to just have to toe the line and get paid. It's incredible how weak some people are. And yet they're the ones who keep proclaiming to the rest of us that they'll fight for our freedom. The only one who can get you freedom is you. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. You got to take that freedom by the throat and make sure it's yours. It's not going to come to you because anyone else makes it possible for it to trickle down all the way from their high and mighty presidential positions to little old you. If you're still waiting for someone to free you from your chains, you're going to be waiting for the rest of your life. Oof. That's not how it works.
Preach.
Right. And there we go. This simpering, sad little dog that used to work for the ZANU-PF Youth League. Look at him begging for forgiveness from the generals in Zimbabwe because he knows his meal ticket is over. He's reduced to nothing. I hope you're listening, all those cabinet ministers in Jacob Zuma's government who think that they've got a ticket to ride. You're all in as much trouble as this guy is, and it won't be long before you're sitting on television, if we'll even let you on television, complaining and whining and apologizing and moaning and saying it wasn't your fault, and you've really had time to reflect, and you've decided what you did was wrong. The jail door beckons. Couldn't happen to nicer people. Things are changing, and they change really goddamn fast in 2017. So brace yourselves. This is just the beginning. Right? Right. All right, when we come back, Justice, the burning platform. It's brought to you by Nando's, and also your calls, your messages, and plenty more on the way.
CliffCentral.com